Today I'm kind of very interested in what we're doing here today, because today I want to talk about something that I see a great deal, which has to do with people who just don't feel what they're supposed to feel. That's it. I mean, let's think about it for a moment. Have you ever been accused of not feeling what you're supposed to feel? You're supposed to feel bad for one thing or another. Maybe you're supposed to feel bad for mankind, and you don't. Somebody puts a baby in your arms, and you're a man. Hey, hey, hey. Testing 1, 2. Let's go back to the music. We're not on air. I'm not sure if we have a technical difficulty here. Call Michael.
Why do you need to call Michael? Michael is right here.
Everything's coming through, Michael?
Yeah, man. It's coming through loud. You found it on your board?
We had a glitch.
Okay.
All right, we're fine. So you're talking about people who... we're talking about people who don't feel what you expect them to feel. And that's a very interesting question. So if you take a baby and you put a baby in your arms, you put a baby in an average woman's arms and she holds the baby in her arms and it's wonderful. She feels this fabulous thing. She can hold that baby for 10, 15, 20 minutes. And it's great. You take that same baby and you put it in somebody else's arm, maybe a man's arm who's not the father. Say, here, you want to hold the baby, and they hold the baby for about 2 minutes, 3 minutes, 4 minutes. All right, take it, will you? And they want to give it back because they don't feel what you would expect them to feel. So that's odd. How could that be? How could that be? How could people feel differently? How could people not feel things like the beauty of a baby and you want to stay around it all the time? Well, that's what we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk about feelings that are not expected. Feelings that are expected of you that you don't feel. Or living with someone who doesn't feel the way you want them to feel. I mean, even you may even be somebody who wants to feel a certain way and you don't feel it. Think about monogamy. How many people get married? Men especially get married. And they're married and they want to feel monogamous. You know, monogamy is not a commitment, it's a feeling. And the feeling is, I'd rather be with no one than you. I'd rather be with you and only you. You're my only choice. And all right, if you're not going to be available, maybe I'll be with somebody else. But the monogamous feeling is, I want to be with you only. Now, when a person gets married, they say, I only want to be with this one person. It's not even a question. If somebody comes along and flirts, you would expect that you would feel no temptation, but you do. Sometimes. Well, what's that about? How could you be feeling something you don't want to feel? Sexuality, right? Sometimes, sex pornography, for example. A man puts on pornography and he says to his wife, here, this will get you excited. Or he says to somebody he's with, this will get you excited. But they don't like pornography. They look at visual pornography and it doesn't turn them on. Instead, if they clean up the house, they may turn her on. That's weird. That's strange. That's unusual. So I want to talk about the paradoxical feelings that we have. Paradoxical meaning it's like it's so strange, it's so unusual, and we've been learning things. You know, yesterday we talked about the tortoise and the hippo. You know, here's where a hippopotamus and a tortoise wound up forming a bond with each other. Very unusual things. How many different things are you expected to feel? Like, for example, if you're somebody who's talented, you're expected to succeed. You're expected to take yourself out there and go out there, and you're really somebody who wants to paint on your own and do things on your own. And you're expected, because you're talented, you're expected to succeed. not what it's about. I remember when I was a drummer, I thought I'd be a musician. I'd make a living as a musician until I played my first wedding. And I said, oh, no, I don't feel what I'm supposed to feel, which is I should be happy to be getting paid to play the drums. No, that's not the way it feels. That takes away from it. So let's look at some of the feelings that people have that they are confused by. Right? For example, organizing. You should want to organize yourself. Somebody organized comes along and looks at your house and it's a mess. Right? They look at your desk and it's a mess. They look at your room and it's a mess. And they say, you know, if you put this all in order, you'd feel great. And then you put it in order. Let's say something's happening. I had this happen just the other day. NBC News came in to interview me and my office. And it's going to be on, this is Thursday night. It's going to be on tonight at 5:30, I believe, on NBC News. Just a piece of something they were talking about. But they come in, and I know they're coming in, and I know they're going to photograph my office. So I say, well, let's clean it up. And we clean it up, and the place is spotless. I love it spotless. I love it. I love it. Then why wouldn't I keep it that way? Things that you should feel. How about patience? Did you ever wish you had more patience than you do? People are talking to you, somebody is there with you, somebody wants your attention, and you just, oh, please cut to the chase, please get to it, oh no, I know what you're talking about, uh-huh, yes, uh-huh, patience, do you have patience? You know, if you're a psychiatrist, you better have patience. No, you don't have patience. Most therapists, they listen to their clients talk, and they don't have patience. They just think about other things. You know, they do, most therapists. But come on, let's talk about the real stuff. Do you have patience? Would you like to have more patience? How about focus? Would you love to be able to focus? Now, there's one that's so hard when you can't. It's so hard to focus when you don't have the ability to focus. I have a good friend who could stand with me, and as he is standing with me, he will look at everything around, and if I say something to him, I know that he's half hearing me. If I say to him, I'll meet you at 5:30, he's not going to be, you know, he's just waiting, waiting, waiting. He's looking at everything around, and then all of a sudden he asks, what time will we meet? Because I know he didn't hear that part. How about energetic? Anybody ever want you to feel energetic? Anybody want you to get up and be more spunky? And you're not. You feel down energy. You feel low energy. More feelings are expected of you. These are feelings that are expected of you that you don't feel. And we're going to talk about them today. We're going to talk about different things. How about involved? What if you happen to be a loner? You're a loner, but people want you to be involved. Come on, you've got to join mankind. You've got to be part of the world. You have to come out of your cave. You have to be a part of everybody. And a part of you says, I want to, but I can't. I can't. Pride is another thing that people expect everyone to have. Pride in your profession. You know, they're expected that whatever you do, if you're cleaning the floors for a living, and that's you cleaning other people, you should have a pride in doing it. So the sense of pride is a very interesting thing. Some people don't have it at all. They don't care. Pride doesn't even enter the picture. What would that be like to live without pride? Do you have pride? Do you have pride? You proud of something you do? Do you ever feel pride in something you do, or in the way your abs look after you work out, or, you know. I mean, you ever have pride? Do you ever have pride? And do you ever feel proud of yourself? Imagine if you didn't have that feeling. Then there's generosity. Some people expect other people to be generous. Now, you could put this together, my friends. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind, my friend. We'll be taking your calls today because this is going to be touching a lot of you. How about this one? You go out on dates, you go out with your friends, and you meet, and you buy dinner. And you go out again, and you buy dinner. And then you go out again, and you buy dinner. And you expect that they would want to reciprocate, but they don't think about it. They don't think about it. And it's not that they just don't think about it. They are non-givers. They are stingy people by most definition. So how could somebody feel stingy? You know, I know a woman who absolutely cuts every corner for every penny, and when she shares a check, she never allows for the tax, and she never, she doesn't. The bill's $38, here's my share of the $38, she forgets about the tax, right, because she scrimps. So you expect people to be generous. You expect it. And they're not. Does that mean they don't love you? How about decisive? You know anybody who's indecisive? What is it like to live with a life of being indecisive? People who are plagued with indecisiveness, they just can't. They try to go in one direction or another, and their poor minds go in one direction. As soon as it gets to an answer, they get another direction coming along, and then they go to that direction, and they're about to take that answer. What house will I buy? What house will I buy? I knew a woman who spent the last 20 years trying to buy a house. She actually tried to buy an apartment in Manhattan, and she started off with apartments in Manhattan costing about $50,000. And she was ready to buy one, and she was ready, but she couldn't decide between one and another, and one and another, and one and another. And she's still up there now, still trying to buy a house when the apartments are now $1.5 million and $1.6 million. But she was indecisive back then. She even found one apartment that was being offered at $1 million that was once offered to her at $75,000 way back when, and she turned it down. So indecisiveness and living with indecisive, people who are indecisive, they feel plagued by themselves. They don't know what to do. Yet you expect them to be decisive, and you say, I won't be your friend if you're not decisive. And they what do I do? How can I be what I'm not? How can I be what I'm not? Take control. How about that? I want you to take control of the situation. Look at that. Everybody's floundering around and nobody's taking control. I want you to take control. I don't know how to take control. I try to take control, but as soon as I said something, they said no. Right? What is this, taking control? Or how about letting go? The opposite of that. If you're somebody who always takes control, somebody comes along and says, come on, let go. Let somebody else make the decision. Just let go. Relax. I can't relax. I wish I could relax, but I can't relax. People expect certain people to get angry. You know, they want you to get angry. And you're not somebody who ever gets angry. They want you to get angry. They expect, they take it and see an injustice, and they say, what you should do is get angry. And they want you to get angry. But you can't. You don't. They want you to follow through, and you can't follow through. So these are all the different things, you know, and it reminds me of a story a long time ago that a young boy told me about his mother. He said, my mother asked me the most important question. I can't figure out the answer. And he was, I think, 11. And the question that his mother asked him was, why don't you love me? Now, why don't you love me is such an interesting question, because if you think about it, it asks you to explain the absence of an emotion. Why don't you love me? Not why are you angry at me. That's easy. I could tell you the answer to that. But why do you have the absence of an emotion? Yesterday, Roberto Atti and I talked about romance and memories, and we talked about the magic that goes into finding a mate that's really spectacular. You know, when you find a mate, you find somebody who you think is just, you know, your soul sister. You can search the entire earth, and there, you finally found him, and here he or she is. But they don't feel the same way. You have the chemical reaction to them. You have all your hormones, all your memories, all your DNA, all your immune system. Everything is kind of working. Your olfactory system, you know, your nose, your smell. They smell perfect. They are fantastic. They are great. but they don't feel the same way towards you. So you go to them and you say, why don't you love me? Is it something I could correct? Are you going to tell me because you don't like my hairdo or something? I don't know why I don't love you. I just don't. I don't feel it. So when the child said it, and the child was, you know, confused by his mother saying, why don't you love me? He said, there is many things that I don't feel. But it felt as if there was something wrong with him not loving his mother. Is there something wrong with every one of these people? How about remorse? What if you're somebody who feels no remorse? You know, and I'll talk about, let's start off with the sexual psychopath. The person who can go around, have sex with anybody regardless of what the consequences are to himself, to them, to anybody else, you know? So, like, if he has sex with somebody who's the girlfriend of his best friend, he doesn't think about it. He just, it's called a sexual psychopath. What they generally do is they have sex because they have no remorse about anything. They don't have any sense of guilt anywhere. Now, is this guy, or woman, it could be either a man or a woman, are either one of them wrong, bad? Well, they look terrible. They look wrong. They get called manizers and womanizers. And it is, of course, some kind of an illness, but it's the way they are. It's like that old scorpion story, you know? The scorpion and the frog, you know the story I'm talking about? It was from the movie The Crying Game, where he tells a story about a frog. A scorpion says to a frog, take me across the river. And the frog says, I can't take you across the river because you'll sting me and eat me. And the scorpion says, no, I won't. And so the frog says, you sure? And he says, of course I won't sting you and eat you. And he takes him across the river. As soon as he gets to the other side of the river, the scorpion stings him. And the frog looks up at him and says, whoa, whoa, why did you sting me? And the scorpion said, because it's what I do. It's what I do. I sting people. I sting things. Well, when you talk about somebody who is a certain way, who is indecisive, who is controlling, who is angry, it's what they do. It's the way they are. And if you talk about somebody who loves a certain way, it's the way they are. It's the love they feel. If they have sex a certain way, if they are sexually addicted, it's the way they are. So how do you fault them for this? Now, let's say that you're someone who is thinking about marrying somebody who has a fault, and their fault is that they don't feel the way you want them to feel. Let's say there's a battle you want them to fight. Or let's say they're too attached to their family. This frequently happens. You know, you want to marry someone, and you want to marry a man, and he's too attached to his mother, and his mother calls a shot, and his mother tells you what to do. And you want him to break away from his mother in some kind of way. You know, and so you kind of tell him that he has to break away from his mother, but he can't because he's connected to his mother in this very unusual way. He will not change what he feels. So what do you do? Break up with him? Do you think, you know, is it all right to expect that people are going to be different than they are? Is it okay? Maybe you should just say we should accept everybody the way they are. Well, I don't know if that's true or not. There's a lot of things I don't accept about people. 212-209-2900 is our number. This is Armand DeMille here with you. We're talking about paradoxical feelings. Feelings that happen that, I heard an interesting story the other day. This woman I know has a very cute dog. It's a cute dog. It's a little dog. It's a yappy dog. And by my saying that, you already can probably hear my opinion. It's a yappy dog because he's sweet and he's amazing to watch and he's very unusual. And the dog yaps and runs all over the place, and he's a lot of fun. So everybody thinks the dog is adorable. Well, this one man looks at the dog and thinks it's adorable, but then he talks about his dog. His dog is a huge husky. It's one of these big Alaskan dogs, a husky. He likes a dog he can hug and hold and wrestle with, right? And not this little toy thing. Nobody could understand why he wasn't that interested in the toy dog. How could you not be interested? How could you not like a painting by Degas? How could you not? How could you not appreciate Beethoven? How could you not? But I'll tell you, when I was a kid, I could not understand how people couldn't appreciate Miles Davis. What's the matter with you? You know, you push your music on people, too. How about Frank Sinatra? How could you not like Frank Sinatra? Expecting people to like what you like and be how you like is okay. Hoping that they would be is okay, so you could share things together. But when you start insisting that they are different, you're saying the following. You're saying, it is so important to me that you are different than you are, that I am willing to sacrifice this relationship, because unless you change, like let's say you're related to a sex addict or a drug addict or somebody who smokes cigarettes. Very tough to be related to somebody who smokes cigarettes nowadays if you're not a cigarette smoker. You know, they smell a certain kind of way. I mean, I used to smoke a long time ago, and I always thought I had every right to do it. But nowadays, you know, the ones who do it, they don't feel they have a right to do it. They're smoking in closets. They can't even smoke in cars if children are going to be in the cars. You know, and you look on the highway and you see these people just, you know, for this time in life, for the next couple of years, they have little clubs where they smoke in circles. So smoking is one of those things. It's an addiction. There it is. Well, what if you're related to somebody who's a smoker and you want them to stop smoking, but let's say two reasons you want them to stop smoking. You don't want to be exposed to the smoke and you don't want them to die. Well, they may not die. You know, it's not that big a deal. I mean, it is, even though we look at it, people who smoke damage their bodies, it seems, but the statistics, unfortunately, do not support how dangerous we know it is. The statistics are something like 1 out of 1,000 people get cancer who smoke. You know, I mean, that's not a very big statistic. But of course, I know anybody who's a long-term smoker winds up with pulmonary disorders and all kinds of other things go wrong with them. So I don't want my friend to smoke. If I have a good, close friend, I want him to stop smoking. I don't want him to do it. But so now I go to him and I say, I'd rather you didn't smoke. And he says, I could understand you'd rather I didn't smoke, but he continues to smoke. If I'm a mate, do I have a right to demand that he stop? Do I have a right to demand that they do and be different than they are and feel different than they do? Why don't you feel more responsible for your health? You know, you look at somebody who never exercises and you say, I want you to move. I want you to get around. I want you to feel like you want to do it. Right? You have a mate, and your mate doesn't want to have sex as much as you do. They used to, back in the old days. But now, no more. Kind of, you know, responsive when you want them, but not the same heat that used to be there, and you want them to have that old heat. And you wonder, is it, you know, something wrong with me? Did I change? Was it my changes that made you turn off like that? Telephone number here is 212-209-2900. We wonder what chases people away. You know, we wonder what kind of judgments we have. We wonder what right we have to ask people to be different. 212-209-2900. Michael, let's take a call right now. And hi there, you're on the air.
Hi, Armand.
Hi there.
Interesting program today.
Thank you.
This is Ralph.
Hello, Ralph.
Hi. Yeah, conflicting feeling, you know, trying to get somebody to be what you want them to be and then realizing that they're not. This program really speaks to me in a big way. You know, I've had that conflict with my wife, as you know. And, you know, it's been a pretty uphill battle. But
Be specific about it, Ralph. Be specific. What are you talking about? Just because you and I know, the rest of the world doesn't. If you want to talk about it, talk about it. You're specifically, right. How do you want your wife to feel different than she does? How do you want yourself to feel different than you do?
Well, that's the whole thing. Is, you know, to talk about it, my wife, I discovered, has a sexual addiction, had a number of affairs, and you know, still professed at the time and still professes now to be deeply in love with me, but was unable to control herself. And now, I suppose, much like an alcoholic, is strains to control herself. And, of course, not knowing this when I married her, I would have wanted her to be different, but I didn't know that aspect of her. And now I would like to feel differently in myself, to just be able to get by this and accept her for who she is and hope that she can be vigilant. But that's kind of tough because I have a lot of preconceived notions about what marriage was supposed to be and what love was supposed to be. And I guess I've had my eyes opened, as it were.
Well, let me ask you something, you know. So what you want her to do is feel differently than she does, and the way you want her to feel differently is you want her never to be tempted by another man. Because she has a history of following through on the temptations. It's not that just you don't want her to be tempted.
I never believed even for myself that there was no such thing as temptation. As you said before, I think temptation is out there, and I think everybody experiences it. It's just what you do with it. How close to the fire do you want to get before you're going to end up getting burned? And she didn't know where that line was drawn. And I suppose I'd like her to feel differently than that, you know. And it's, you know, I can only drill it into her head so much. You know, she's going to do what she's going to do. You know, because I do love her. Other than that aspect of her, she's perfect for me. You know, if I were to eliminate that, it's like the perfect woman is in my book.
So, Ralph, you being a voyager, you know, and I love how honest you are. You're somebody who says two things. I would love her to be changed. I would love her to change. And I would love to change my inability to embrace her the way she is. Not with her sexual acting out. I don't want to embrace that. But I don't want to obsess about this. I want to let it go. I want to be able to love her.
Right.
You know, that's what I'm hearing from you.
Yeah, and very, so, very hard to do because
very again, hard to
these
do.
Notions are all there. You know, yeah. What should have been? What? Why didn't you conform to my standards and what I thought everybody else held themselves to a standard? And it just wasn't that way. You know, but again, I do love her for who she is. Just hopefully, you know, not with, because again, like what you said before, I have at this point laid the law down to her that if she was to go back into this avenue again, you know, I might not want to walk away from her, but as a person, I would have to. I just couldn't see myself getting emotionally abused again that way, because to me it is an emotional abuse.
Ralph, I want to thank you for calling in. Thank you.
Thank you, Armand.
Sure. Hey, this is Armand DeMille with you with a Positive Mind. It's the caring, you know, it's the caring. It's should you care? Should you care? You know, does it really matter? You know, the phone rings, you don't answer the phone. The person on the other side is desperately trying to reach you. Let's say your mother's trying to call you. Should you care? She calls you over and over again and she wants to reach you. Should you care? Right? Let's say your kids want something from you and you're not going to give it to them. Should you care? It's about caring, you know, it's about that. It's about believing that you should and shouldn't. Well, I don't know, we're going to talk about that more, and we will be taking your calls when we get back from our break. We're going to take a short break when we do a little special music related to the topic of caring, and then we'll come right back.
I should go around weeping. I should care. I should go without sleeping. Strangely enough, I sleep well. But for a dream or two, but then I count my sheep well. Funny how sheep can lull you to sleep. Oh, it upset me? I should care, but it just doesn't get me. Maybe I won't find someone as lovely as you, but I should care, and I do.
I should care. I should care. I should go around weeping. And I do. The telephone number here is 212-209-2900. If you want to ask questions about Mel Torme, I probably couldn't answer very many. But if you want to ask questions about your own mind, about what's expected of you and what you expect of someone else, I mean, it's just so clear that, you know, part of almost every couple that ever comes to see me, every couple, comes in with some kind of a problem. I do couples counseling, and I see people, one time they come in, and the first thing you can always tell, the one person wants the other person to be different, and so how do you want them to be different? And they talk about how they want them to be different. But, you know, the only thing wrong is sometimes you just can't be different. Sometimes you are who you are. Now, maybe, let's say, you have a husband or a wife or a boyfriend or a girlfriend or whatever they are, and they're depressed, and you're tired of their being depressed, and you don't want them to be depressed, and you say to them, oh, God, I don't want you to be depressed, and they say, but I am depressed, and that's the way I am, and you say, but I don't want you to be depressed, I want to live my life. And they say, but I can't do anything about it, and you say, yes, you can. You can go to a doctor, you can find out, go to psychotherapy, get medication, do whatever you got to do, but don't be so depressed. So often you could say that, and the person says, I'm sorry, I am this way, and I want to stay this way. And some people who are depressed actually do want to stay exactly the way they are. Well, then you have to leave. Then you say, okay, I'm either going to accept you the way you are and build my life on the outside, and I may say to my husband, wife, boyfriend, girlfriend, well, listen, you may be depressed, and I don't want to separate with you for the sake of the children, but I'm going to go out and have my own life. And that may include my dating other people and seeing other people. I won't bring them home, but I want to live a joyous life, and I want to dance. What if you're somebody who likes to dance salsa or line dancing, and your mate won't do it? You know what I mean? Just get out there and find somebody else or do it with someone else if that's what you need to do. That's what comes about. That's the kind of issues that come up. I'm not saying what you should do, but I'm saying the issue is always this, and I'm sure all of you out there live with this in your life. Either you expect someone to be different or someone else is expecting you to be different. 212-209-2900. This is Armand Mill. Let's take another of your calls. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. This has been an incredible day of BAI programming, and this is a great show you're doing today. So I have a little complex issue here in that the person I'm dealing with is my father. For 50 years, he's my father. And my mother died 7 years ago, and he gets this new girlfriend who's threatened by me and basically guilt trips him into trying not to spend any time with me at all because she's threatened by me. And here is a man who's been loving and affectionate all these years to me, and all of a sudden he's different. So do you get the dilemma here? It's like,
sure.
He's changed. You know, he's changed.
Yeah, you don't want him to change.
Well, but wait. Obviously, we all want change for the positive, but we don't want that change
for
the negative.
No. Let me tell you, there's a standard a standard joke, which is a man gets married to a woman and hopes that she stays the way she is. A woman gets married to a man and hopes that he's going to change.
Well, that's true.
You know?
That's true. That's kind of cliche. It's true.
You know, it's kind of a cliche, but
Because it's true.
Because it's not comfortable to you that your dad changes.
Oh, but wait.
You have a wonderful daddy, and your daddy goes and he's loved. I bet she's younger than he is, too.
No. Believe it or not, they're both 89.
They're both 89.
And he is, they still do the deed.
They still have sex.
Yes.
And you don't want your daddy to have sex.
No, I do. I'm totally into it. I'm glad for him. No question about that. But my question is simply this, and be reasonable here, Armand.
I'll be reasonable, I promise.
Why can't
she have a bad woman?
No.
She's terrible.
No. Why can't he have a good sex life with her and her be big enough to understand? You see, part of the problem is she has a horrible relationship with her kids, and they don't want to have anything to do with her. So she's jealous of the fact that both me and my sister love my dad, and we're in touch with him regularly. Except I'm more like my mother than my sister is. So I am like my mother's representative to her on this planet.
Well, okay,
she doesn't want me around.
Because it gets too complicated, you know, so seriously, in all truth.
Life is complicated sometimes.
Your dad is 89 years old and he's having a good time, right?
Here we go.
Is he having a good time?
Not really, because...
He's not having a good time?
Well, I mean, he's not having... Okay, let's not get overboard about the sex thing. No, he's not having a great time because she broke her hip, and now he's a prisoner with her all the time. But
they probably have oral sex.
I would think so, but...
You see, you have a very unusual feeling towards your dad. Because most women, if you said a thing like that about their 89-year-old dad, they thought the image would be terrible.
Oh, no.
I understand. Now, listen, what's your name?
Abby,
you've tried to talk to this woman about this. You've tried to say to her. You've tried to make peace. Because, you know, there's got to be a part of you that really doesn't want Dad to have anybody.
No, you're wrong.
To. But there's
got to be. You're going from these cliché therapy positions.
Wait a minute. How could I be wrong if I said there's a part of you? You mean there's not, you don't think there's
my
one.
My pinky.
Not one millionth of a part of you? You mean you're saying there is not a single.
Is it not possible? Is it not possible for a second partner after a 54-year-old marriage? And she was married twice before, too, and buried two husbands.
But, Abby, my job is not to help people point fingers at other people. My job is to help people understand themselves. And my job with you is to help you understand you. And so when we say that, I understand what you're saying.
I pay someone for that, Armand.
But
yeah, go ahead.
No, but you don't pay anybody as good as me.
Oh, yeah.
I promise.
You're so modest, Armand. That's what I love about you. Go ahead.
I promise. You see? And the truth about this is that there's a part of you that's very active in here.
That's very what?
Very active in here. And whoever you're paying for the job of your insight is not helping you get enough insight around it, because it's very hard for you to look at yourself around this issue. It's very hard. I believe you're probably right. I believe you're a good judge of character. I believe that this woman who your father is related to is probably a little wacky, and she's probably doing very strange things. But so what?
Uh-huh.
I mean, so what? It should be a part of you at your age with your intelligence and your amount of insight that should be able to settle this in some way. But here we are again. There should be a part of you that feels differently, too, as well as a part of her that feels differently.
I know you got to move on, but can I just ask you a question? If you had a child from a marriage, and then you were into your second, you know, your next relationship, and you loved that child, Armand, and that next partner made a happy relationship with her contingent upon you rejecting that child. Do you think you would go along with that, Armand?
Never.
That's what I'm talking about, though. But he does.
So really, the issue you have is with your father, not with the woman.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Betrayal. I feel betrayed.
You've got to deal with him.
I know, but that's what I'm talking about. Because I don't think you would do that if a woman held you up.
Abby, you're still not looking inside. Hey, thanks for calling in. I know I'm not going to lose you as a fan.
Never.
It is a great day on WBAI. 212-209-2900. This is Armando Mosa. There's where a big problem comes in. And I run into it so often, where a person says, no, I have nothing to do with this. It's all about them. It's very tough. Of course, all of us are going to listen and hear Abby talking about the fact that her 87-year-old father has a new sexually active relationship with a new woman. And what's it like to stand by and have your daddy, who was your daddy, go off with somebody else? Forget about whether they're sexually active or not. It's just he is going to have this new preference. And what's it like? You know, you're supposed to let it go as a child. You're supposed to let it go like a parent. If you're a parent and you watch your child go out and start dating for the first time, or I know a man who's got a daughter, and his daughter's 15 years old, and his daughter started having sex, you know, and he knows she's having sex, and he's doing everything in his power to try to let go and to let her, you know, go and do what she has to do with the guidance and the acceptance. And it's this little girl, but she's out there. He wants to feel different than he feels. So he bites his tongue, you know, he bites his lip. He keeps his mouth shut. He does not say things like, is that what you're going to wear? He talks about that. He says, you can't imagine the clothing she wears when she goes out. Of course, as every protective parent has felt with their child. Well, just as you feel that with your child, the children very often feel that with their parents. They want to control their parents as well. Who blames you? 212-209-2900. It would be nice if you could control the entire world and just have everything your way. Wouldn't that be nice? But it doesn't work. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Armand. How are you?
I'm great.
My name is Dawn. It's been a number of years since I've spoken to you. But this is an interesting topic for me. My husband and I have been together for about 20 years, and he has a history of depression, and he's always had the attitude that his life would be different if I changed. If I did something, then he would be better. So as a result of that thinking, I have since gone back to school. I've gotten a second degree. I now work. I have a very good job. I'm going back to school again. I just have pretty much taken off within myself. So I have changed. And it used to hurt me when I would look in his eyes and see the disappointment and see that, you know, whatever I was doing still wasn't making him better. And it just recently, you know, I started to say to myself, you know what? I don't care. I can't fix you. You know, like, why is it my responsibility to fix you? So two nights ago, we were sitting around the table, and I was very crabby. I came home in a bad mood, and I snapped at him. So I sat down at the table after the kids went to bed, and I said, you know, I just want to apologize for, you know, my behavior before. I feel really bad. And the conversation kept going, and it went to a bad place. And he finally just looked at me and said, will you just shut up? He was like, and I said, what did you say to me? And he's like, will you just shut up? And what had happened is I compared him to his stepfather, who acted pretty much
well,
in
wait,
the same
wait, wait.
Way.
What did you feel when he said that? You felt delighted.
You know what? I used to feel really hurt. And I found that this time when he said it to me, I was shocked. But it didn't hurt me anymore. It made me want to walk away. Like, it just made me want to say, okay, that's it. I've had enough. So now I don't know what to do with the feeling that I have, because now I don't care anymore. You know, I don't care. And that,
well, this
now
is a
I'm
good beginning. You see,
that.
Now you don't care the way you used to care, because the way you used to care was you used your husband as your excuse for having to keep your life together. You married a depressive. You know, when you marry a depressive, it means you want to get buried. You know, when somebody marries somebody who's chronically depressed, they're marrying an albatross. You know, they're putting an albatross around their neck. Your husband, strangely enough, in some spiritual way, said, You have to not be buried by my albatrossian nature. You have to go out and change. And so your husband, without even knowing he was doing this, says to you, I want you to learn pole dancing or something exciting.
He probably does.
I probably does is what I'm hearing. And he wants you to change in some way. So you, using him as an excuse, go out and you improve your life. And this game goes on between the two of you of him saying, I'll stay depressed because as long as I stay depressed, you're going to go out and do things for your life. And for as long as you care. And now you've gotten to the point where you don't need him to be depressed and he doesn't need you to be excited anymore. I'll make you a bet it changes. I'll bet his depression changes. Because at the moment he said to you, will you please shut up? He basically said, I'm angry.
Yes, and at the point, I saw that.
At the point when a depressed person says I'm angry, they have a doorway to freedom. Because that's all depression is anger that's covered up. So I'm saying to you, this is an interesting new doorway for you. So what if you now live for yourself and watch him, see what happens next?
Well, you know what? It's scary, though. I mean, it's very scary to me because now I feel like I could walk away and feel nothing.
That's great.
You know, and that scares me.
That's great. That's great.
That's great.
That's a wonderful feeling. Bring that into your marriage and say that to him. Say, now I feel this. And whatever happens, happens. But it is sometimes the best way to start a passionate marriage is to feel impassioned.
Wow.
It's when you feel the separation, then you could start to get together.
Wow. Okay. Well, I thank you for that insight because it's been really for 2 days sitting in the pit of my belly. So yeah. I appreciate that insight.
Yeah, it's amazing. And the thing I told you earlier that was even more dynamic is that his depression served to keep you living your life in an actualized way.
Exactly. It certainly did. It absolutely did.
So maybe you need a thank you. Thank you for your depression. Maybe you should get him a card. Thank you for being depressed.
I actually said that to him, and he doesn't like it, so...
I understand. Okay, thanks for calling.
Thank you, Armand. Have a great day.
I got to call Hallmark.
Okay, right. Bye.
I have new cards out there. You know? Thank you for being depressed. Thank you for being crazy. Thank you for not caring about me. Therefore, I went out and I had to take care of myself. Right? Dear thank you. Dear Mom, I want to thank you for being so selfish. This way I had to find some sense of my own life. What would all these funny cards be that we would make up? Imagine if you wanted to. That'd be a great thing to do. You know, armand@brainlink.com is my website. You want to send me? Imagine you made up cards that you would like to send. Cards. You know, my deepest sympathy for your not caring at all about me. Or my congratulations for not caring about me. I had to go and take care of myself. 212-209-2900. Time for two more calls. Hi there, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille.
Hello?
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 Yes.
Hi. I'm calling because I heard, you know, the topic today and I'm overly interested.
Yeah.
I'm a survivor of rape like 3 times. And, I'm in the position or situation with my relationship with God where it's now beginning to develop all over again after all these years, and I have people telling me how to believe in God, how to relate to God, what to feel where God is concerned, and it really gets me angry, like telling me how to feel spiritually. Also, I've had to like hide my true feelings about who I really am inside.
Mm.
Because I am not accepted when I really begin to express who I truly am inside. And that hurts. And I'm learning a lot about life and the world, that it's a cruel place to live in spite of my own optimism and my true nature, which is one of optimism, or else I would not have survived what I went through.
You have been through some of the roughest things that a human can go through. You have suffered some of the worst indignations to personhood. You have gone through that. That's on one hand, you know. On the other hand, we're looking at you and we're seeing that you're finding some way to reconnect with your spiritual self.
Yeah.
Now, along the way, there are always these overzealous teachers, these people who point and they say, the only way to do it is you have to pray on one knee and not on the other knee, and this way you got to hold the rosary over here instead of over here. And they do these things, and you wish you could embrace your own spirituality, your own way, and why are they leaning on you? But you see, you're somebody who always invites people to lean on you. The world has its cruelties, and you have suffered some of those cruelties. The world is also a beautiful place.
Yeah, I know that.
Because there's a part of you that is a very loving soul who has been taken advantage of. Your lovingness has been taken advantage of. But don't give up on people. Don't give up on people just because a few of them are really, really, really stupid in the way they treat other humans.
It's my, what's important to me, in life is my relationship to myself and my relationship to my divine, higher power. And, because that's been my strength through all this. And, that was damaged earlier in, you know, in my life by the perpetrator. And, I am in the course of mending that. And I haven't given up on myself, not given up on, God as I know him or her. And I haven't given up on the human, my fellow human beings either. But it's just that every now and then I get some person who, you know, just whatever, just, you know, come with their things, their stuff. And it's like, sometimes I wish I could strengthen my mind again, or maybe I need to be patient with myself a little bit more in terms of knowing that it takes time to build the strength up to protect my mind against this kind of bombardment.
No, you know what I think you need?
Yeah.
I wouldn't say this to everybody, but you need to get angry. You're afraid of getting angry. You need to get angry. You need to find your angry self and bring that angry self to the table. You're afraid of it. And until you could find the part of you that allows you to feel angry, you're going to be suffering these kind of indignations. So I don't mean the rape, but I mean the other indignations of people telling you what to do.
Mm-hmm.
So find your angry part. If you can't find it, call me up. I'll help you find it. That's going to be your real stairway to the heavens, you know.
Okay.
The real stairway to the heavens is when you could take all of you along. If you're afraid of any of your feelings, if you're afraid of your anger, or afraid of your sadness, afraid of what you feel, all of you is not there.
Right.
Okay. So on the road.
Thank you.
Thank you for calling in.
Thank you.
Sure.
Bye-bye.
Well, this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. That's kind of amazing. You know, the people are amazing. Here at BAI, it's quite a soulful program. I think we're going to have to pick up the energy here a little as we go, which I will do. And I will be back with you on Tuesday, my friends, at 1 p.m., If you want to get a copy of today's program, or if you want to hear it again, you could go to thepositivemind.com, or you can go to wbai.org and see if they have it up there yet. If not, I will be back with you, absolutely for sure, Tuesday at 1 p.m., my friends. Send me an email.